This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Take a stand. Everybody. See Live, Off the Record with Shabazz Alang is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, RF Bank and Trust, Raw Star Assurance, and the Water and Sewage Corporation.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabazz Alang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call on the show today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me 393043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So I wanted to, I saw something that led me to a question that I wonder if you may have pondered, right? Chester Robarts in the Nassau Guardian has an article. It's entitled Economists Skeptical on Bond Issues Impact Revenue Growth. And in this story, as you know, the government of the Bahamas put out a bond offer of some $300 million, $200 million of which was backed by the Inter-American Development Bank. So the Inter-American Development Bank sort of acted like a guarantor for at least $200 million of it, so that if the government of the Bahamas did not meet its obligation, the IDB was saying to bondholders, and we would need it, okay? And that bond issue was oversubscribed, meaning that they got enough people to take the bond. In fact, more people wanted to take the bond, meaning lend the money to the Bahamas government than who did not. So let me tell you how this bond issue works, right? And a bond is essentially a note, a promissory note from the government that says, if you give me X number of dollars, then I will pay you a certain amount of interest. Say, let's say that's 8%, 7%, call the coupon, and I'll pay you that for the period of your holding of this bond. It could be 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever the bond is. And when the period is done that this bond is issued for, so it's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, I will pay you back your money. So you earn interest on the amount you lend annually, and then you get your money back at the end of the day. That's what a bond issue is. Now, these bonds typically are such that if I am going to take up a bond for like 3 months, maybe I'm gonna ask you to I'm going to say I'm only offering you 3% interest because it's a short-term something. You get your money back soon. There's not a whole lot of risk involved in between now and the 3 months when you get your money back. If you're going out 15 years or what, all kinds of things could happen. You could have a war. You could have deep inflation. You could have significant economic turmoil. So for all of those risks, I'm going to require more interest to be paid than for a short-term bond. Why? Because I'm hoping that, okay, I'm getting back for the risk I'm taking more money sooner so that if something does happen, well, I've been able at least to recover more money sooner than not. And so typically that's how it works. You get an Inter-American Development Bank, which is a multilateral institution, multi meaning many, lateral meaning countries, essentially, multilateral institutions that's owned by all the member countries of the Americas that are a part of it. So they have their subscriptions to the Inter-American Development Bank that funds the bank. The bank lends out that money to countries and does other things with countries, earns fees on that money. And so the bank is a pretty solid institution. So if the bank, the Inter-American Development Bank backs you, you're really getting the backing of an institution that has the backing of many countries, right? 30 plus, including the United States and Canada. So when that happens, you would think that investors would be more comfortable, would be more interested in the offering, and that is exactly what happened. Now, I was involved with a $300 million bond offering when I led a roadshow for the Bahamas, and this was in the midst of the Great Recession. Went to New York to speak to investors, went to Los Angeles to speak to investors, went to Boston to speak to investors. We didn't have a backing of an IDB then. Nobody backed us. But we did get oversubscribed of the $300 million to about, I think, $380 plus million dollars or thereabouts. So us having oversubscription for our offering isn't unusual, and even having oversubscription for our offering in bad times isn't something that hasn't happened before. As I said, was involved with such a bond offering. But notwithstanding the backing of the Inter-American Development Bank, there are analysts who are saying that the Bahamas' economic and fiscal issues are being, should we say, kind of set aside by the fact that it had this offering, got the IDBs to back $200 million of it, and got this subscription. They are essentially saying that the government of the Bahamas still has revenue issues in light of inflation, its high indebtedness, and without doing things that could shore up that situation, no amount of subscription or oversubscription of an offering is going to hide the fact that it still has those issues. Okay? Now, I have a question for you, which is this. There are even some who suggest, mind you, that investors are looking to see the Bahamas enter an IMF program to give it even more confidence. Because what has happened with the Bahamas' yield is like it's tanking in the market and not faring well, according to some folk. And they think that this is an issue of concern about the overall economic and fiscal prospects of the country. Okay? And so that means that there's unfavorability and the level of confidence in the Bahamas' strategy for dealing with its economy and dealing with its fiscal program. That's some people, mind you. I didn't say everybody. I'm just saying some people, and that speculation is reflected in what is happening when our bond is traded and what is attracting in terms of yield, okay? So here's the thing. If you, the Bahamian public, take the position of these analysts who are saying you are ignoring the fundamental challenges that exist in your economy and in your government finances, that you are not doing sufficient to address the issues that plague you, and that essentially, if you don't address them, one in the Bahamas, monkey is going to put question to Hima. Or as some people like to say, the chickens are going to come home to roost. If the government of the Bahamas and you and me, if we accept that premise, if we accept that perspective, if we accept those concerns, what would have to change about what we are now doing to demonstrate that we are taking a different approach to our situation? This is a very important question. For those who are not pleased about, satisfied with the direction we're going in because they believe that it does not take seriously enough the seriousness of our economic challenges, what would we have to do differently? If we went on an IMF program as an example, what might that program indicate that we have to do that's different than what we are doing now? Before I venture into any discussion of the answers like that, I ask you to tell me if that question interests you. Tell me if you feel that's a discussion you want to have. And I'm going to wait on several of you to tell me. If not, I promise you I can switch this up and else. What would we have to do differently? What would we look like if we accepted that, you know what? The government of the Bahamas ain't serious enough. Government of the Bahamas is not managing its money affairs sufficiently to really help sort ourselves out. What would we have to do differently? What might the Bahamas look like in this budget that's being presented now and future budgets? What might the country look like if we were doing something different? What you say? You want to have that discussion? Send me a note. Send me a text. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, if I don't get some responses, then I'm going to figure, let's talk about something else. Hey, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. We'll be back after this break. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn clinic.org/Caribbean.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Forget those boring socks this Father's Day. Show Dad you care with something more personal. Get a gift he'll cherish and remember forever from Inventive Intellect. Leather and nylon wallets, baseball caps, neckties, keychains, mugs, flasks, customized dog tags, t-shirts, and more. Plus, we've got some custom boxes starting from only $10. We've got everything you can imagine for a special, personalized Father's Day at Inventive Intellect. Sunlight Cottage off East Street North. Call us today at 676-5811 or 821-94-INTELLECT.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabar Gulang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-304. Well, I got one person say they were interested. So let me quickly say that, you know, essentially, if you subscribe to what the analysts believe about the Bahamas is oversubscription of its bond, not really addressing its serious revenue issues and indebtedness and so forth, then you are going to have to also believe that what the Bahamas has to do differently is raise taxes, that is, introduce new or increase existing taxes to get more revenue. That's what they want. That's the thing that they want more than anything else that they think would give them confidence. Why? Because taxes are mandatory pay citizens and entities in the country have to make, must make. So sure revenue for the government once the government is in lapse in collecting it. So that's what they want. They want sure revenue. And how do you get sure revenue? New taxes or increases in taxes and fees. That's what your life would look like differently. Might not be you particularly, because maybe your socioeconomic status may not get hit by the new taxes, but maybe high income Bahamians and residents might get hit with such taxes. So that would be one thing that you could be sure we would have to do differently. We know it would be different because right now, over the last three terms, the governments have not been increasing taxes. We introduced a new tax that was VAT. We got $500+ million coming into the treasury. But that's a wash now because we are back into big time deficit spending, notwithstanding that new set of money. Other than that, we twinkled with a couple of fees there, increase in taxes or no introduction of any new taxes to bring significant new revenue. But that is what the credit rating agencies, the analysts out there who have a negative view of things, that's what they want. They want new taxes, increased taxes. They also want to see cuts in spending. They want to see curbing of your wage bill, you know, shed some of that load off of your current salary bill. Cut out some of those spending on some other things. That's what they want to see. Right? They want to see these kinds of things because that's the way you bring fiscal health. You cut spending, you increase taxes. If the government bombs does the two of those things, you'll watch the deficit start to tank. You may see the country get to the point where, in fact, you have a surplus, and you could say, okay, we could argue about the government even trying to pay that, typically like to say, right? But there's no way it happens outside of that saving and except you have the kind of economic growth that just is roaring. It's roaring. So that your base, the base from which you collect your taxes is so expanding that you're collecting much more taxes on the same rate of tax because your base is much bigger. So let me give an example. Let's say you collect 10% taxes on a base of 100, where you get $10. But let's say you keep the rate at 10%, but now your base is $200. Now you collect $20, that's twice as much. Let's say your base is now $300, same rate of tax, 10%, $30. If it's $500, $50. So you didn't increase the taxes, you didn't even introduce a new tax. But because of the base, you are getting more money from the same tax. So you can either rev up your economy significantly, or you can taxes, or you can cut spending, or a combination of those things. And until you have that happening, you're not going to get the kind of confidence from some people that you might want, right? This text says, what happens if the government can't pay interest and capital on time? If the government can't pay interest and principal on time, and that continues over a period, well, you will default. And if you default, it isn't as if somebody's gonna come and collect something from you because you have it backed by land or backed by homes or anything like that, saving and accept the securities that back the recent loan the government got from one of the big international financial agencies. I forget which one it was now. In that case, then they will own the securities that the government used to back that loan. But it isn't as if they could come and do anything. Your ability to borrow in the international marketplace and possibly even at home will be eliminated. You won't be able to borrow. And trust me, if the government cannot borrow, bro, you don't have to worry about us. We are going to be in trouble because the only alternative to that is it goes to the IMF and it says, I want to go on an IMF program. And you will have to live with that stink on you, not the stink of the IMF, but the stink of defaulting on your loan for many years. And that means the government will have to curb its activities enormously to try and revive its fiscal reputation. And that means that you are gonna probably look at some civil servants going home. You'll probably look at some cuts in salaries of civil servants. You'll probably look around, you look at maybe some reductions in infrastructure development, investment, and those kinds of things because you're now in a situation where you cannot get access to money that you used to get access to. And when you're getting access to the money, it's for such exorbitant rates that it is almost paralyzing to take on those rates to secure the money that you're securing, giving you even more hardship. This text says, could they totally understand they want to see debt reductions. What about the country's economic climate at the time? Do they not consider how these recommendations could make things worse? It just seems like they don't care about balance. Am I wrong? Well, they actually go hand in hand, okay? So it's not a question of them caring. These are not people who are in the business charity for you. They are basically just looking at the realities of your economic circumstances. Now, they are looking at your economic situation. That's what is giving them the trouble, okay? And this is this is a very important question you raise. This is something that we aren't seeing ourselves. We are probably getting a bit, I think, deceived. Well, not deceived, but we're getting a bit sidetracked by the fact that the Bahamian economy is growing. But growing in relation to what? Growing in relation to the fact that the government made a decision to essentially turn down the economy enormously so that you were not doing much in the way of economic activity compared to what you were doing prior to the pandemic. And now that the government has freed up things, now you're seeing more economic activity, but more economic activity relative to the low economic activity that you artificially created down to fight COVID. It is not, if your economy was doing what it's doing relative to 2019 economics, you'd be like marginal growth, right? Because you haven't gotten back to that yet. So we have to be careful not to see this economic growth that we're having now as some stellar performance that we are having in our country. It's stellar in relation to having almost practically shut down the economy. Now, you have to ask yourself, okay, beyond, once I get back to pre-pandemic economic activity, maybe in 2023, maybe in 2024, is the Bahamas going to see 4% growth? 5% growth, 6% growth, 8% growth? Let me tell you, if we do, it would be something of a miracle. Oh, it would be a miracle. So might we get back to 2% growth, 3% growth, which is modest? Oh, good, but modest. Then the folks start to say, okay, back to this modest growth, but your financial affairs remain strained, remain challenged. And so that's the kind of thing that they are looking at. So they're looking both at your economic circumstances and at your financial issues. Remember, all of your downgrades, all of your downgrades have been about your economic prospects, right? The credit rating agencies haven't only been saying that your debt is going up. The debt going up was not even the big, big issue. The big issue is your debt is growing up, but your economy's prospects are low. Because it's from that prospect, it's from that economy's growth that you're going to pay this debt that you are taking on. And so they're looking at both sides. And from their point of view, they aren't seeing enough being done. Even if your economy is growing, they're still saying, well, if it's growing, why not take a bigger chunk so that you could pay your bills better, so that you could be more stable in paying your bills? That's the kind of thing that they are looking at. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Relang, your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same way.
Switch for better when you move your mortgage to Scotiabank.
Leave behind that old mortgage plan and open the door to a low interest rate. No payments for up to 2 months and cash back of 2.5% of the mortgage amount up to US $10,000. And guess what? It gets better. Apply for your Scotiabank credit card and enjoy a low 9.99% introductory rate for the first 6 months. Switch for better and upgrade your mortgage today with Scotiabank. Offer ends June 30th, 2022.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises residents of Pinecrest Drive, South Beach East, that the corporation will commence improvement work on Tuesday, May 31st, 2022, for a duration of 5 weeks, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. During this period, there may be some interruption in the water supply, road closure, and detours around the work area. Motorists are advised to avoid the area where possible. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and appreciates your support as they work to improve their level of service.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good
for you. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Quality.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, Everybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivagul. I'm your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. You know, financial hardship, when you get into it, it's not easy to get out of. It takes work. And the truth is, when you typically we get into financial hardship over time. It doesn't happen overnight. And we don't always do it by doing dramatic things. Sometimes that can happen. For instance, people can have a devastating loss because they went into a business and suffered significant loss. That could happen. Sometimes people lose their jobs and can't find a replacement for some time, and that's dramatic. So wipe your finances out. But typically when people run into financial difficulty, it happens a little bit over time. You know, you make a decision here to go on vacation rather than pay things that you ought to pay. You make a decision to do this and that and the next thing. And the next thing you know, you're there. Governments can do the same thing. You don't have to be something dramatic, even though in our case, we've seen some dramatic things that have caused us some significant issues like Dorian and the pandemic. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, sir. Good day, sir.
Hey, good day. How you doing?
Not bad. Is it possible that our economy can grow, right, and the government not tax it efficiently? And if so, some examples.
I repeat the question. Is it possible the economy can grow and the government not tax it efficiently?
Right. And if so, give me some examples.
Well, you know, for years...
I mean, whereby can get and whereby to receive revenue and not receive an efficient amount because of exemptions and such in some ways or another.
Yeah. Well, for years, For years, there are those who have looked at the Bahamian economy and said, just as you are asking, that the government of the Bahamas wasn't sufficiently taxing the economy. Why? They say that because our yield, meaning when you take the percentage of revenue to GDP, our yield was on the order of 17-18%, while in countries like Barbados and Trinidad and those, they were seeing 21-22%. So the suggestion was the Bahamas, given its wealth, needed to tax more. And that was one of the arguments that resulted in the value-added tax, I think, increased our yield now from 17-18% to about 19-20%. So yes, it can happen. You can have more economy than the government is effectively taxing.
All right. And then what about the government in receiving revenue and not putting it and spending it in ways that everybody doesn't benefit efficiently, everybody across the board, all classes?
Well, I mean, that can happen, but the truth is not every spending by the government is going to benefit every class in any specific way. You benefit overall. For instance, the government puts money into education so that poor people's children or people who can't afford private schools' children can go to public school. Well, there are taxpayers whose children go to private school and they have to pay. They're not benefiting from that, except that when those children are, the society is better off, they benefit as a whole. So everything the government spends isn't going to affect everyone the same or even at all. It's the country's overall situation that you look to be affected by it. When the government spends on a dock in Crooked Island, that's not gonna affect somebody in Freeport, Grand Bahama, but the fact that the citizens of Crooked Island get to be better off means the country as a whole gets to be better off.
You know, I am of the view, you know, it's only my view, you know, that things like that the poor needs that you know, like housing, that, you know, not the affordable housing, but the low wage housing, you know, is not here. So you know, there are many adults and, you know, sharing residence with their siblings and things, you know, and you know, but, you don't see it.
But
know,
the
they're not on
but,
the street begging, you know.
Yeah, but I mean,
but they
listen,
have issues and it's
but
a
listen,
problem.
But listen, the government has provided thousands of homes, right?
Yeah, they're affordable, but they're not low-income homes.
No, they're but low. So let me ask you, you really want the government to provide low-income housing for everyone who's low-income? That's what you'd like to see?
Those who cannot afford homes. You know,
I'm asking,
they can write with a Google public housing, right? It would be government-owned homes, but when I Google public housing in the Bahamas, it'll say, well, these are mortgage homes. The government says that they are homes that are mortgaged to the mortgage corporations. They're not public homes, they're private homes.
But my friend, what I'm asking you,
right,
I'm not disagreeing with you on what you're saying. I'm asking you, do you want the government to make it possible for every low-wage worker to have a home?
Not to have a home, but to have for affordable rent, you know.
Affordable
housing,
rent?
Not home, you know, but housing. Housing and home for me is different.
Okay, so you want the government to build housing so that every person could have housing.
Afford, right.
Okay, now let me
and
ask you a question.
Shelter.
That sounds great. That's beautiful. Right. Listen, that's a beautiful vision.
Right.
Are you prepared to have taxes raised on you for that?
Sure, I feel that, you know, I'm like semi-retired, so if you know,
okay.
but these are the things I advocate for, you know, for years, you know.
All right, that's beautiful, man. Trust me, that's beautiful, beautiful. If you have enough citizens who want that and want to pay for that, that's the way it should be. See, but what I get concerned about is when people want something and aren't prepared to pay for it, because it's not the government's money. That's me and you as taxpayers. We got to pay that.
Yeah, well, the load, most of that load is on the middle class. Like they say, the middle class carry the people, the middle class and the rich. You know, but the poor people, they have the VAT, so they are doing their part. They got the VAT that they
I think I missed something you said. You said the middle class and the rich people are doing what?
I mean, it's normal that the middle class carry the country, them along with the rich, the burden, right? Right, but so now the poor people, they are paying the VAT that they never paid before. So I feel that they are paying. What the saying is that housing should be no more than 30% of your salary, right? I mean, for it to be feasible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at that. You know, the 30% of the poor man's salary, what is he paying of it for rent? You know, and that will tell us, you understand me, what the low-cost rent should be, the low-wage rent should be.
Well, no. Let me tell you what should tell you what the low-cost rent should be. You can't just go on the basis of some generic 30%. You have to go, what does it cost you to build the housing? And
that's why it's a public initiative, you know. And
but I'm saying though, once you, it's a public initiative, but it's taxpayer money. Once you build it, and I now have to pay for it, that will determine how much I want to extract from people to pay for it.
You know, when I study it and research it, you know, and wherever it is, and that amount is 30% in the UK, you know, everywhere, that's the study.
But they don't provide housing for everybody, my friend.
The shortage all over. You know what I'm saying? They have issues. You know, but that's the train of thought.
But you know, the government of the Bahamas does provide rental housing, right? You know that.
We did some, but for some reason they stopped.
They still have them, but they're not building anymore. But they still have some.
And then I feel they never had enough.
Okay, I got you. I think I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that.
But thank you much, man.
All right, my brother. Have a great day.
All
right. Yeah, I could always take an attitude that says, "Yeah, this is what we should do," and I'm prepared to put my money behind getting it. I could always pay for that. Ms. Texas, as an expert economist, is it possible for you to break down the percentage of taxes paid by the citizens of the Bahamas and comparing the percentage being paid back out to its citizens for aid to those who benefit on a larger scale? Do you have knowledge of the percentage of homeless families in the country? And can the government improve those unfortunate citizens in this particular capacity? Okay, that's a question. We'll have to take when we come back. This says, yes, Mr. Lange, I would like to hear that discussion. If people think that the government is not doing what it needs to do to get its fiscal house in order, then we need to be prepared to take other steps. People may not be so happy with that, with what those other steps entail. All right. Texas, great show as usual. It's possible to have affordable housing in New Providence because New Providence is running out of land. You no longer could afford 75 by 100 piece of property. Even government homes now sit on less than 50 by 100 piece of property. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break for news. And when we come back, we will continue our discussions. We'll be back after this news break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same issue.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232, or 325-4259. You can text us on 4224796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So I want to turn my attention now to something else. I note that another article in The Guardian is reporting that the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Darren Handfield, is saying that in light of revelations, let's say, by the Minister of Labor and Immigration, Keith Bell, that the Minister's administration spent more than $500,000 to furnish the apartment of a Bahamian ambassador in Europe during COVID-19 pandemic, that there should be an inquiry, an investigation into the matter. So here is a former minister administration minister responding to these revelations about the renovations of an apartment for an ambassador, saying that it should be investigated. Now, this is interesting because ordinarily there is no renovation that is going to take place to an ambassadorial residence, to a mission, that doesn't go through the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Okay? Through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, through the ministry. Because those renovations would either come out of the Ministry of Public Works or out of some capital allocation made in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, managed by the Ministry of Public Works. Secondly, there is no amount of money that's going to be spent above $50,000 for any renovations that's not going to go through the tenders board. Who is the tenders board? The tenders board is essentially a subcommittee of cabinet, but tends mostly to be the whole cabinet. So in order for more than $50,000 to be spent in that way, we're talking in this instance $500,000, they would have to spend $50,000 at a time on each tender item or less, so as not to trigger the need to go to the tenders board. And for that to happen, the chief financial officer of the ministry responsible for carrying out those works would have to be involved. That's the permanent secretary. The minister can't sign a check. The minister can't sign an invoice to send to the treasury. And treasury money has to be spent on these things. And I agree it should be investigated. You can't just come out and say $500,000 to spend on the renovations. I'm sorry, no. Listen. This is public affairs. This is public business, right? Come on, guys. If you want to do catch up, listen. If you want to do gotcha politics, I understand that. That is part and parcel of things. That's the politics part of it. The governance part of it requires a fulsome statement of facts. A fulsome statement of facts. Was there an allocation for the renovation of an apartment? Does the government of the Bahamas own this apartment? Because if the government of the Bahamas owned the apartment and you went ahead and spent $10,000 on a bed, well, the government of the Bahamas owned a $10,000 bed, it could sell if it wants, right? Or you can sell it if it wants anyway. It's an apartment. Who owns the apartment? Okay? Where is this? They say it's a mission, as far as I'm aware, two missions in Europe. We got one in London. It's a very old, and it's not an apartment. We own it, right? We own that mission in London, as far as I'm aware, unless something changed. We might have sold a mission, but we own the High Commission, their office, it's the office and the residence of the High Commission right there in London, as far as I'm aware. And then we have an ambassador, to the WTO, there in Geneva. Now, I know there's not a mission. We own there, so it has to be an apartment. Where else in Europe have we anyone? We don't know anybody in Paris. We don't know anybody in Berlin. We don't have anybody in Rome. Well, where else do we have a mission? We got those two places. Was there a capital allocation for the renovation of any ambassadorial residence? In whose head was that allocation? Because the parliament had approved it. Was there a tender process involved with the renovations? What did the renovations entail? When the payments were being made for the bed, the furnishings, etc., was the payment made by the Treasury of the Bahamas? Did the Treasury of the Bahamas transfer monies to the mission? Because what happens is our missions aren't making any money. What happens is every quarter or so, consistent with allocation given to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, sends funds to the missions. The missions do collect, they do collect some monies. Like they collect consular fees and them kind of things, but they then have to send that money back to the Treasury. Or they put it in an account. It is in an account, and then the money's either transferred up, or the Treasury works some situation in which there's a netting off or so. But I keep saying, right? Like when I hear stuff like this, I mean, all kinds of bells go off in my head because I know how the Treasury works. I know how the government's financial system works. So I can tell you one thing, $500,000 wasn't spent to renovate a government built a apartment for an ambassador, not approved by the Prime Minister of the Bahamas and the Minister of Finance. Let me say it once again, $500,000 was not spent to renovate a government an apartment for an ambassador that was not known by the Prime Minister of the Bahamas or the Minister of Finance. Didn't happen. And if that happened, some heads should roll from the Treasury down to some departments. Couldn't happen. You hear the former minister say, well, I don't know nothing about it. I don't know nothing about it. Now, there's no, you don't have to know, but you're paying attention. Sometimes people do this and you ain't paying attention. But $500,000? You have to spend that in pieces over time for the Treasury not to know that happened, for the Minister of Finance not to know that happened. I want you all to imagine. I would like any of you all to imagine something like that happening, and Hubert Alexander Ingram don't know about it. Now, I am not even saying this is true. I'm just telling you, I'm not saying this is true. I'm telling you, when I hear this kind of thing, all kind of bells and whistles go off in my head. I mean, all kind, right? I need more information. So somebody says it's in Brussels. We have the minister appointed an ambassador to Brussels. Okay, we have an we have okay. Oh, we have okay. There's there was an ambassador to Brussels now. Okay, that was new. That was new. You know, I would tell you, I noted that some appointments of diplomats were made under the former administration that I do not recall seeing public announcements for. Now, I may have just missed those because I recall some names of people who were non-resident ambassadors to things. I don't let nobody know. I know I thought you didn't know, right? So there was an ambassador appointed to Brussels. Oh, somebody saying, even giving me an, I have no idea. I have no idea. Who was the ambassador to Brussels? Who was appointed to Brussels? Did y'all get this information? Let me see if I can do a search of something here. Because I don't know, but I'm just saying. I'm saying now circumstances. See that see before we jump to conclusions. Yeah, it was announced too. That appointment to Brussels. Yes, Marie O'Brien was appointed to Brussels. Yeah, so I see I missed that news. But before we jump to conclusion, I'm saying. When I hear this kind of stuff, all kind of bells and whistles just go off to me. All kinds, right? All kinds of bells and whistles. I'm asking, was it an apartment? And I'm being told, no, there was no renovations in Brussels. That's what I'm being told. So that, if first of all, let me see now. Let me make sure the minister said, what did Mr. Bell say? Mr. Bell said there was $500,000 worth of renovations done, right? Did he say it was done in Brussels? He said in Europe, right? That's what he said. I'm reading the quote. To furnish the apartment of a Bahamian ambassador in Europe. Now, first of all. Mr. Bell is the Minister of Labor and Immigration. We have a Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Fred Mitchell. And let me tell you something. One thing I know about him, he isn't shy to speak about anything, and he's very articulate, right? Did we hear anything like this announced by him? Why is the Minister of Labor and Immigration announcing that? Okay, and why so cryptically? Why would you announce that a Bahamian ambassador in Europe and not say, well, we understand that there is an apartment at number X2343, Brussels, Belgium, or London, England, that was rented by the Bahamas government to the tune of X amount per month, that when the newly appointed ambassador went there, that the newly appointed ambassador had the apartment renovated for, and right on $500,000 now, right on $500,000. You see, right on $500,000? Really? Right? Look at all these rounded numbers. Let me show you something. If you went and did any renovations to anything, tell me when you can ever have everything rounded off this way. $12,000 for this, $19,000 for that, $300,000 for that, $9,000 for this, $20,000. You know, you're gonna hear one, £19,847 or so, right? That's what you're gonna get. In Europe, it's euros. If it's in London, it's pounds, right? What are the facts? That's important. If this is an issue of abuse of funds and what have you, I agree with the former minister, let's investigate it. But bring us the facts though, right? This stuff shouldn't be a gotcha thing. And if you have the opportunity to get the information, make a statement, make a fulsome statement about it, right? But I can tell you, there's not a chance on planet Earth that a renovation to the tune of $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 takes place to any ambassador's residence that isn't known to the prime minister or the minister of finance. First of all ambassadors are envoys sent by the prime minister, not the minister of finance, not the minister of foreign affairs, you know. These envoys are sent by the prime minister through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to do Bahamas government bidding. And so if they spend $500,000, I ain't blaming the ambassador either. Because if you are able to get the government of Bahamas to do what you think is required to have your accommodations and them be sufficient, what's the accommodation? See, all kinds of questions get raised in my head. Remember I told you in London, we have a residence that's also the office of the High Commissioner. What is the situation in Brussels? Do we have offices rented in Brussels and an apartment for the ambassador? What is the situation? We don't even know. We should get this kind of information from the Minister of Foreign Affairs. We don't even know. All we know is $500,000 was spent, and $19,000 spent on this, $20,000 spent on that, $12,000 spent on this, and so forth. No, man. Gotcha politics? Okay. Governance requires more. Right? Was there cabinet approval? Was there a tenders board? Was there a bidding process? What was the process of acquiring on the approvals? Because you listen, ain't no ambassador going to spend no money. I worked in the Bahamas embassy in Washington, D.C. And an ambassador ain't going to spend money like that without letting you know. We're not going through the channels. Yeah, there was an embassy open in Brussels. What I'm trying to figure out is, was there an office and an apartment, or there was a combination office and apartment, or office and accommodate and residence? Because that can make the difference to how something is done too, right? But so I'm aware now that there was an ambassador appointed to Brussels. But I'm saying to you folk, like, there's too much in the story. I don't know if maybe the reporters will get an opportunity afterward to ask Mr. Bell some more questions, to get some more details, et cetera. But there's not enough here for me to understand or appreciate what's going on. Okay, yeah, so I'm reliably informed that there was both a office for the ambassador and a residence for the ambassador. And so, you know, two things has to happen here. One is the former prime minister, who was also Minister of Finance, should speak. He has not been shy about speaking and defending his legacy on many issues, as he ought not to be shy on defending his legacy. I'm not talking about overspeaking the leader, but defending his legacy, he ought to speak. Additionally, there needs to be more appropriate information provided on these allegations. Allegations, right? There needs to be, there should be. You know, there should be. I don't know if the suggestion is that $500,000 was too much to spend on the renovations of an apartment. Again, I'd like to know. I mean, we rented an apartment. So if you rented an apartment, if you rented an apartment, and again, I'm saying, I don't blame no ambassador. I don't blame the ambassador for anything. First of all, what are you saying? If you renovated the apartment, it was too much money to renovate the apartment? We really want to get in that discussion? It was too much money to rent the apartment? Is that what we're saying? Because if you buy furnishings for an apartment, you carry your furnishings with you. So let's say we built a residence. You can carry those stuff with you, right? If you move to another apartment, you can carry that stuff with you. I don't know what the cost of things is there. I don't know. I don't know, was this renovations to, like what do you do to an apartment? To, if you move into an apartment, right? An ambassador moving into an apartment, what did the ambassador do? Move into a funky apartment? Then they had to do something to the wall? And the this and the that, and the next thing, he says to furnish it, right? Man, listen, it's something. Oh, I'm seeing here the former prime minister did, in fact, defend that. The ambassador, I know the ambassador did nothing wrong. The prime minister, well, it says, the former prime minister, I'm reading an eyewitness news statement that says, former prime minister, Dr. Hubert Minnis is defending, see, I told you that it should happen, right? So was I wrong? This is as it should be. Is defending the former ambassador to Belgium and the head of mission of the European Union, Maria O'Brien, whose residence and accommodations under his tenure reportedly cost the government hundreds of thousands of dollars, emphasizing that ambassadors do not spend taxpayers' funds and that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs likely followed proper protocols. Likely followed proper protocols? Likely followed? Bro, seriously now, folk. Okay, anyway, let me read the rest. His comment came after Senator Dianne Hemphill, the former minister, Foreign Affairs Minister, called for an official investigation into Keith Bell's claims of the more than $1 million was spent on the ambassador's residence and hotel accommodations during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Minister said it is unlikely that Hemphill would know about the expenditure. He said Bell, who discussed the matter in the housing house, said, listen to me. If I was a former prime minister, I wouldn't have made that statement. No, sir. No. It is like the former minister of foreign affairs would not have known about the expenditure? Come on. You're gonna furnish an apartment for an ambassador and the Minister of Foreign Affairs doesn't know about it? Doesn't know? Come on, guys. What kind of stuff is that? When I was in Washington, D.C., we went there on a rental allowance of so much. And there was supposed to be an increase in that rental allowance for years. And the increase wasn't forthcoming. The Minister of Foreign Affairs knew about that. You're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to outfit the office or residence of your ambassador, and the Minister of Foreign Affairs isn't told about it? Now, I can't blame the Minister of Foreign Affairs if nobody told him about it, but didn't know? Oh, I would not have made that statement. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails. and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
That's right, boys and girls. Get ready to play basketball at the 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th at the Kendall GL Isaacs Gym, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily. So parents, get your boys and girls ages 5 through 18 registered now. Applications available at the South Bahamas Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Tonic Williams Darling Highway, and at the registration desk at Campsite Kendall GL Isaacs Gym. Special appearances by NBA players, legends, and coaches. So get your boys and girls registered now, ages 5 through 18, for the 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th.
Imagine driving your dream car, doing all the things you never thought you could, like perfecting your parallel parking skills or picking up your date. Everyone loves to dream. Stop dreaming. Start driving with a brand new offer from Scotiabank. With an auto loan from Scotiabank, benefit from no payments for up to 2 months, a low interest rate up to 9 years to repay, and free insurance for the first year up to 2.5% of the loan amount. Promotion ends June 30th, 2022. Stop dreaming and start driving today with an auto loan from Scotiabank.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabargo Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. 422-4796 is our text number, and 439-3043 is my WhatsApp number. So the former Prime Minister, Dr. Juven Minnis, as is appropriate, was responding to claims made by Mr. Keith Bell, the minister, about this substantial amount of money spent to renovate the residence of the former ambassador to Brussels. In fact, the former Prime Minister acknowledged that it was the ambassador to Brussels whose residence or apartment was renovated. I cannot understand him conceding that the former Minister of Foreign Affairs didn't know about this. That's really remarkable to me. But he says there is a system. The ministry, they would look at various apartments, complexes, et cetera, and once it meets their requirements, that would be approved by the ministry. In terms of purchasing furnishings, et cetera, again, the government has a policy. He's right. There's no question about that. The government, that's what I told you. There's a process, a policy. So I don't blame any ambassador at all, right? He says the ministry would look at it. What ministry? Well, is it the Ministry of Public Service that looks at accommodations for government officers? Is it the Ministry of Foreign Affairs? Is the Ministry of Finance? And are they doing that without the knowledge of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs? Seriously, why? Because you want to have some equity in the way you handle your ambassadors all over the world. Why would one ambassador on a equitable basis be able to get this done when another ambassador cannot get that done? That's why you try to standardize the process so that there is a policy in place and a way to do that. So honestly, the statement provides as much questions to me as the statement by Bell provided questions to me, right? I would say we are still not seized of the facts in this matter. We do not have the facts. So at this point, we are mostly speculating. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. If the government was collecting real property taxes from the rich like Palm, Key, Albany, Bahama, Atlantis, et cetera, we would not be in the position we find ourselves in. That I do not believe that to be true at all. Because even if you collected all the taxes, that real property taxes that's outstanding, you're talking about, say, let's say $600 million, right? That might take care of the budget for this year, barely, the deficit, the deficit for this year. But what about the last year? And the $1.3 billion the year before, and the billions the year before that. And then going forward, when you have a $300-400 million deficit, next time when your real property taxes have all been paid up, you're not going to collect another $400 million. So that's not true. That's not true. The numbers don't add up. This text is no administration assured exactly they are doing what they're doing with the VAT monies collected. All the administrations have shown what has been done with the VAT money collected. You just don't want to accept it. You don't want to accept it. The VAT money is spent on all the salaries, education, police, defense force, public health, all of that is VAT money. What happened was you got caught in this notion that was portrayed that the VAT money was going to do something special. And that's not true. It never happened. The VAT money went where the customs money went, where the road traffic fees went. They all went to the same port, and they're same money being used to pay for everything the government pays for. So I want to correct that notion. It is untrue that the government has no government assured where the VAT money gone, because the VAT money, once you see the expenditure that is reported in the budget, that's where the VAT money gone. Same place. This text says, what was the circumstance under which $5,000 was spent for two lamps, allegedly? Say laugh or laugh. But first of all, let's be clear. You could spend $2, $20, $100, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, $100,000 on lamps. Because there are such lamps that people can value that way. Should you spend it? That's a different story. But that it can be spent, there's no question with that. No question. You could easily spend $5,000 on two lamps, if you wish. Should you? That's a different line. Thanks for your daily effort to enlighten us on the workings of our government. But listening to you, I can't help but wonder why these alarm bells didn't go off and same questions haven't been pushed while that was being said, haven't been pushed by the former administration while that was being said. Would you say it's a bad luck for the FNM being unable to clarify, defend these claims, especially with former PM right there? The FNM, not unlike the Republican Party, really ain't what they were just 20 years ago. Very sad. Yeah, I mean, if you are in the House of Assembly, someone says something about something that happened under your watch, yes, you should be able to get up and forcefully defend it if you let it happen. And if you cannot forcefully defend it, you say, well, you know, that was an oversight and surely a mistake or poor management or whatever. And you know, y'all should do something to make sure that don't happen before again, right? You should be able to do that. Or you should be able to go back to whoever might have more information and get that information so that you can forcefully and articulately make your case. So I agree with you. It should be possible. Should be possible to be done, you know? As I said before, renovations of this order and size ordinarily has to go through the cabinet. But you know, we were in a pandemic and in the pandemic looked like, you know, the competent authority kind of assumed a great deal more power than would ordinarily be the case when you were running a cabinet government under ordinary circumstances. So that could be the case too. So I absolve Minister Darren Hemphill of any blame because he said he didn't know anything about it. And the former prime minister said he wouldn't have known about it. So you know who knew about it, right? I told y'all the prime minister had to have known and the minister of finance had to have known. And he sounds like he's saying, I knew. But his explanation isn't saying, no, you're wrong. It wasn't $500,000. It wasn't $1 million. No, you're wrong. It wasn't a $20,000 spent on this or $10,000, $19,000 spent on that. He didn't say any of that. He said, though, there is a policy. And so now what we want to find out is, was this expenditure made in line? What was the expenditure? And was it made in line with the policy? And if it was, then let's end the show. Move on. Let's go. Let's go. You will recall work that was done, or an acquisition that was made to a government residence in Atlanta, where a controversy was over the $2.5 million or $1.5 million or $2 million or whatever it was spent on it, you know, then too. So this isn't new, but again, what are the facts? That's important to know. This text says, should not the former Minister of Foreign Affairs have these details? He should have. But the Prime Minister said he wouldn't have. So it is possible that the Prime Minister and them want to spend money and don't go. I mean, honestly, it's hard to see how you can get the channel that kind of funds to the renovation of a mission and the Minister of Foreign Affairs don't know. That's hard to know. It ain't impossible, but boy, that's hard to conceive of. That would be the utmost disrespect to your colleague to do something like that. A Minister of Foreign Affairs, a Prime Minister spending that kind of money to do something and don't tell his colleague, we renovating down the road there, to X, Y, and you're looking at Marriott, blah, 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 blah. No, that's really odd. Really odd. Let me tell you something. One day I was in my office at the Ministry of Education. My cell phone rang. On the other side, Hubert Ingraham, Prime Minister. Shivala Lang. I said, yes, Prime Minister. He says, come downstairs. I came downstairs. Prime Minister Ingraham was driving himself in a car. Tell me, get in. Took me down to, on Camp Road, to the primary school there on Camp Road. What do you remember the name of that primary school? I forgot. And he wanted to show me some work that was being done to the air condition down there and some delays that had happened, and he wanted me to put some fire under the process to get it done. This was an air condition at the primary school. He was aware of. Did the same thing to me about some wall repairs down to the Queen Elizabeth Sports Center. He could have gone down there himself, but he came to me, the minister responsible. And you are doing substantial works to something. Yes, Uriah McPhee Primary School, that's right. You're doing substantial work to a mission, and you don't inform your Minister of Foreign Affairs? Really? You know, this text says, good day, Mr. Lang. Minister at the hotel she was staying at caught a fire in Brussels, and he said it was a budgeted item and it is an expensive place. If that's what I said, right? If it was a budgeted item, if there was an allocation for it, no, what's the issue? And if there was an allocation for $500 million renovation, it was passed by the Parliament of the Bahamas. If the Parliament of the Bahamas didn't ask any questions about it, now you got to blame the opposition members who were in Parliament last time, which includes Prime Minister Davis and about five others. If they didn't ask about it, right? The Deputy Prime Minister was there too, if it was allocated. And you could look and see, you could go on the budget and check and see if there was some allocation. Maybe it might have been a lump sum in capital works, and so you might have seen it as a renovation to the mission. So, who knows? We're going to take a final break, ladies and gentlemen, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Fidelity, we're good for you.
We know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, Marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
A local paper in Grand Bahama is back every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Hulang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We have a text here that says, as a government, money should not be spent because there is money. It should be justified. It's the people's money and should not be spent out of them. I agree with that 100%. 100%. This text says, can you make a suggestion of some ways the government could grow the economy other than just relying on taxes paid by citizens? Well, the government doesn't rely on taxes to grow the economy. In fact, taxes shrink the economy. So the growth of the economy has to happen by investments, domestic investments and international investments. That's how it happens. That's how the economy grows. New economic activity. That's the way it goes. And you have to go out there and attract the investors. Do things that encourage investments. Create policies that make people want to invest in certain areas. It says, while all governments have allegedly mismanaged funds, we were really disappointed in the FNM administration's campaign slogan was accountability and transparency. I got you. Okay. You know, some more text here says it was a good day for the salesperson in those transactions. Could have been. This text says, Mr. Lang, the former PM Minister has to explain the clarity about this expenditures on former PM Ingram's watch. Minister should see him to seek advice on how to respond to this with sense. Why would Mr. Ingram be able to help him respond to this? Mr. Ingram was in there. You know what happened, just say what happened. Get the facts and say what happened. You know, if it's something you're not concerned about, you thought was a sensible amount of spending, then you say that, you know, that because people still may not like it, but that was the determination that you made. You know, and that's governance. All right, somebody said here that they can't see how the former Minister of Foreign Affairs didn't have these details. Well, I could see how it happened if the Prime Minister said that he wouldn't have known. So it could happen just that way. Just that way, because he said he didn't know. So nobody talked to him, but somebody did say, but he doesn't talk to his ambassador, so Minister of Foreign Affairs didn't talk to ambassador? That's a good question. But he need not necessarily have done so, but it's a good question. You know, and it's all odd. It's all very odd to me. you know. But hey, anyway. Hopefully over time we'll get some more information and maybe figure some more things out about it. Man, it's not like money stolen or anything, but it is, you know, people an elaborate sum of money to be spent on apartments furnishing. So, you know, I can understand the concern and therefore why there needs to be better explanation. Well, it looks like we're gonna no longer have to a health visa to come back home, and visitors won't have to do so. You still have to have the negative COVID test, but no longer having to fill out that form to be able to come home. So things gets a little easier for both ourselves and for visitors coming home. Still got to get that test though. Pay that $50 to $80 to get that test, if not more, for PCR if you decide to get one. The United States is eliminating the testing requirements to travel to the U.S. So that's a reduction for the Bahamians going over. We haven't eliminated the testing, but we've certainly eliminated the need for the visa. And so the Minister of Tourism, the Honorable Chester Cooper, Deputy Prime Minister, believes that this is a good move, the right direction, to give us more competitiveness and encouragement to folks to do the right thing. I mean, to come to the Bahamas. Oh, yeah. Okay, let me correct that. Yeah, the health visa was eliminated for us a long time ago. That's right, long time ago. It's the visitors that it's eliminated for. That's right, because I remember the last time I traveled from Florida, I didn't have to fill out the health visa. I just had to get my COVID, vaccination if I was going to use the antigen. So thank you for that clarification. Yeah. So visitors don't have to do it. We didn't have to do it anymore for some time. That is true. Well, we'll see how it all pans out. I do want to just say, and backing up on our first set of conversations, that there's nothing that I hear from our domestic side that tells us that our financial situation, the economic situation is not good. I do give credit to the Minister of Economic Affairs, Mr. Michael Alkides, who has said, he has soberly said, listen, you know, we still have to exercise some caution. We still have to be aware of the challenges that we face, et cetera. But I get the impression sometimes that in terms of the way we're proceeding, we think that we are back to normalcy, and we're not. We're far from it. We are still significantly challenged, and we have to bear that in mind. Now, with the U.S. having now to fight inflation, I want you to know what that means. The U.S. is fighting inflation to slow down its economy. Why is it doing that? Because what they think is driving some of the inflation is demand. And so demand is a function of money's being in people's hand to spend. So people have money to spend, they're gonna spend it. That spending is driving up demand, and while demand is going up, supply is more difficult to get to fill that demand. So that then causes you to have a bidding up of the price. So the US is trying to fight inflation by raising interest rates so that they can slow down credit and some of that money that's going in people's hands. And in doing so, people withdraw some of the cash out of the economy and slow down the growth. Well, if the U.S.'s growth is slowing down because they want to take money out of people's hands so they could spend less, well, that means spending less on vacations too and stuff like that could be. And so that could have an implication for us, except it might not have as much implication for us, because if people want to spend less and save money. They might seem to go to a place with shorter distance from themselves, and the Bahamas becomes an option still. So it doesn't necessarily have to have the same impact on us that it might have, but it is a concern that be a risk that we have to be aware of as we move along. Because if they have to fight this inflation hard and fight it for a period of time, it could eventually begin to have some impact on our own situation. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Relying, your host. Trust you. Have a wonderful day. God bless you. We'll talk to you again. Stairs Live.
Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Record with Chivago Line is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, RF Bank and Trust, Raw Star Assurance, and the Water and Sewage Corporation.